First scene of The Double Gallant, or The Sick Lady's Cure. Act 1, scene 1, is the park.
Clairemont.
Mr. Atoll, your very humble servant.
Oh, such an adventure. I was just going to your lodgings. Such a transporting accident. In short, I'm now positively fixed in love for altogether.
All the sex together, I believe.
Nay, if thou dost not believe me, and stand my friend, I am ruined past redemption.
Dear sir, if I stand your friend without believing you, when that do as well? I've seen you twice in love within this fortnight. And it'd be hard indeed to suppose a heart of so much metal couldn't hold out a third engagement.
Then, to be serious, in one word, I am honourably in love. And if she proves the woman I'm sure she must, we'll positively marry her.
Marry? Oh, degenerate virtue.
Now will you help me?
Sir, you may depend upon me. Ah. But pray, give me leave first to ask a question or two. What is this lady's name?
Faith, I don't know.
What are her parents?
I can't tell.
What fortune has she?
I don't know.
Where does she live?
I can't tell.
A very concise account of the person you design to marry. Pray, sir, what is it you do know of her?
That, Clairemont, I'll tell you.
Then pray do, Mr. Atoll.
Willingly. Coming yesterday from Greenwich by water, I overtook a pair of oars whose lovely freight was one single lady with a waterman in a handsome livery in the stern.
Uh-huh.
When I came up, I had at first resolved to use the privilege of the element and bait her with waterman's wit until I came to the bridge. But as soon as she saw me, instead of turning her head aside or cramming her hoods in her mouth to raise my curiosity, she looked at me, she smiled, she talked. To be brief, her conversation was as charming as her person, both easy, unconstrained, and sprightly. But then her limbs...
Oh, such raptures! But pray, Mr. Atoll, how came you so well acquainted with her limbs?
By the most fortunate misfortune show that ever was. For as we were shooting the bridge, her boat, by the negligence of her waterman, running against the piles, was overset. The stream drove her, by the help of her clothes, toward me. At sight of her, I plunged in, caught her in my arms, and with much ado supported her until my waterman pulled in to save us.
So?
Ah, but the charming difficulty of her getting into the boat gave me a transport that all the wide water in the Thames had not power to cool. For, Clairemont, while I was giving her a lift into the boat, I found the floating of her clothes had left her lovely limbs beneath as bare as a newborn Venus rising from the sea.
Oh, what an impudent happiness art thou capable of!
When she was a little recovered from her fright, she began to inquire my name, abode, and circumstances, that she might know to whom she owed her life and preservation.
Why then, Atoll, you told her your name?
Nay.
Huh?
For to tell you the truth, I durst not trust her with my real name, lest she should from thence have discovered that my father was now actually under bonds to marry me to another woman.
Ah.
So, Faith, I even told her my name was Freeman.
Freeman?
Mm, a Gloucestershire gentleman of a good estate, just come to town about a chancery suit.
But Atoll, why?
Would you not see, Clairemont, I was unwilling any accident should let my father know of my being yet in England, lest he should find me out and force me to marry the woman I never saw, for which, you know, he commanded me home.
Hmm. Well, but could you not learn the lady's name all this while?
No, Faith, she was inexorable to all entreaties.
Oh.
Only told me in general terms she would give me proof in a few days what hazard she would run to requite my services. So, after having told her where she might hear of me, I saw her into a chair, pressed her by the cold, rosy fingers, kissed her warm, and parted.
Why, then, you are quite off, I suppose, with the lady that you made an acquaintance with here in the park last week.
No, not so neither. One is my Juno, all pride and beauty, but this my Venus, all life, love, and softness. Now, what I beg of thee, dear Clairemont, is this.
Mm-hmm.
Mistress Juno, as I told you, having done me the honour of a civil visit or two at my own lodgings, I must needs borrow thine to entertain Mistress Venus in.
My lodgings are at your service.
But I want immediate possession, for I expect to hear from her every moment, and have already directed her to send thither.
Oh, have you?
Prithee. Come with me.
Oh, Faith, you must excuse me. I expect a lady here in the park that I would not miss her for an empire. But yonder's my servant. He shall conduct you.
Very good. But in the meantime, I'll e'en go home to my own lodgings, for to tell you the truth, I expect a small message there from my goddess imperial. And I'm not so much in love with my new bird in the bush as to let t'other fly out of my hand for her.
But pray, Mr. Atoll, sir, what name does your goddess imperial, as you call her, know you by?
Oh, Clairemont, sir. With her I pass for a man of arms and am called Colonel Standfast.
Colonel Standfast.
With my new face, John Freeman of Flatland Hall, Esquire.
Flatland Hall.
But time flies. I must leave you.
Well, dear Atoll, I'm yours. Good luck to you.
Oh, graceful air her symptoms doth reveal. Such charms adorn the sickly fair.
Good day to you, Kenneth.
Tom Clerriman, good day.
You're constant, I see, to your morning saunter. But why this morning with a song on your lips? Is it true what I have heard of thee, Careless, that after having railed at marriage all thy life, thou hast resolved to fall into the noose at last?
I don't see any great terror in the noose, as you call it, when a man's weary of liberty. The liberty of playing the fool when one's turned to 30 is not of much value.
Hey, day, then you begin to have nothing in your head now but settlements, children, and the main chance, eh?
In so, in faith. But in hopes to come at them too, I'm now forced to make my way through pills, elixirs, boluses, tisons, and gallipots.
What, Careless, is your mistress an apothecary's widow?
No, but she's an apothecary's shop. She has her physic for every hour of the day and night, for it is vulgar, she says, to be a moment in rude and perfect health. Her bed is lined with poppies.
Huh?
And the black boys carved at the foot of the bed that the healthy employ to bear flowers in their arms, she loads with Dioscorium, hartshorn, rue, and asafoetida.
But pray tell me, Careless, what other charms has this extraordinary lady?
She has one, Tom, that a man may relish without being so deep a physician.
What's that?
Why, £2,000 a year.
Ah, no vulgar beauty, I confess, sir. But canst thou for any consideration throw thyself into this hospital, this box of physic, and lie all night like leaf gold upon a pill?
Oh, dear, sir, this is not half the evil.
Not half?
Nay, her humour is as fantastic as her diet. Nothing that is English must come near her. Her rooms are all of Japan or Persia, and her dress Indian. In short, she's for anything that comes from beyond sea, and she's in love with nothing of this side the line but the apothecaries.
Apothecaries, quotha? Why, your fine lady, for aught I see, is a perfect dose. In a month's time, she'll grow like a laxative, and a kiss will be able to work with you.
Ah, but to prevent that, Tom, I design upon the wedding day to break all her gallipots, kick the doctor downstairs, and force her, instead of physic, to take a hearty meal of a swinging rump of boiled beef and carrots, and so, faith, I have told her.
Oh, that's something familiar. Are you so near man and wife?
Oh, nearer, for I sometimes plague her till she hates the very sight of me.
As sometimes, Careless, I think my Clorinda hates the very sight of me.
Oh, Tom, but how stand thy own affairs? Is thy Clorinda kind yet?
Faith, I can't say Clorinda's absolutely kind, but she's pretty near it. For she's grown so ridiculously ill-humored to me of late that if she keeps the same airs a week longer, I am in hopes to find as much ease from her folly as my constancy would from her good nature.
Oh, nay, Tom, be plain with me.
Why then, Careless, I tell thee, I fear I have some secret rival in Clorinda's love.
Your reasons, Tom.
Women's vanity seldom gives them courage enough to use an old lover heartily ill till they are first sure of a new one that they intend to use better.
What says her guardian, Sir Solomon? He is your friend, I presume?
Yes, or at least I can make him so when I please. There is an odd £500 in Clorinda's fortune that he has a great mind should stick to his fingers when he pays on the rest of it, which I'm afraid I must comply with, for Clorinda can't easily marry without his consent. And yet, she's so altered in her behaviour of late that I scarce know what to do. Prithee, Careless, take a turn here in the park and advise me.
With all my heart.
And as we go, give me that song I heard thee singing a while ago. 'Twill cheer me.
What, my song upon a sickly lady?
Corinna, with a graceful air, her symptoms doth reveal. New beauties rise with her disease, and when she's sick, we die. When she's sick, we die.
Act Two. The scene changes to Sir Solomon Sadlife's house close by the park. Enter Sir Solomon with Supple, his man.
Supple, dost not thou perceive I put a great confidence in thee? I trust thee with my bosom's secrets.
Yes, Sir Solomon, yes.
Ah, Supple, I begin to hate my wife. Oh, but be secret.
I'll never tell while I live, sir.
Nay, then I'll trust thee further. Between thee and I, Supple, I've reason to believe my wife hates me too.
Oh, dear sir, I doubt that's no secret.
But can she have the impudence, thinkst thou, to make a cuckold of a knight, one that was dubbed by the royal sword?
Alas, sir, I warrant if you were 10 times a knight, she'd give you dub for dub, sir.
Oh, subtle when her blood's up. I confess she's the devil. But suppose she should resolve to make me a cuckold in cool blood.
Why, if she should, sir, don't take it so to heart. Cuckolds are no such monsters nowadays.
Oh, would I were satisfied.
Oh, sir, your worship knows I was always against your leaving the city and coming to this end of the town.
And thou wert indeed, my honest supple. But a woman, a fair and faithless woman, wormed and worked me to her wishes, and now I run mad when I think on't.
Oh, sir.
Every powdered wig I meet at this end of the town is a piece of ordnance planted against me honour. The rattling of a fine chariot gives me the spleen, and my very soul set on edge at the squeak of a fiddle.
And what's more provoking, sir, the abominable rogues always pitch upon this side of the park for their music and intrigues.
Dogs, villains, monsters. Spud, I've been in a sweat ever since I lived here. Twice or thrice a week, all the cuckold makers in town rendezvous under my very window. Insupportable. And to think I must have a young wife with a murrin to me. And though I'm jealous of her, I think her very ugly.
Oh, that's because you're married to her, sir.
And as for her expenses, no arithmetic can reach them. She's always longing for something dear and useless. She'll certainly ruin me in china, silks, ribbons, fans, laces, perfumes, washes, powders, patches, jessamine gloves, and ratafia.
Ratafia, sir, that's a cruel liquor with them.
The only way to put a stop to her career must be to put off me coach, turn away our chairman, lock out our Swiss porter, bar up the doors, keep out all visitors, and then she'll be less expensive.
Aye, sir, for few women think it worth their while to dress for their husbands.
And then we shan't be plagued with me old lady tittle-tattle's owies in the morning.
No, sir.
And nor me lady dainty spleen.
No, sir.
Or the sudden indisposition of that grim beast, a horrible Dutch mastiff.
No, sir, nor the impertinence of that great fat creature, my lady Swilty.
And her squinting daughter.
Yes, sir.
No, supple.
No, sir.
After this night, nothing in petticoats shall come within 10 yards of me doors.
Nor in breeches, neither.
Oh, only Mr. Clerimont. For I expect him to sign articles with me for the £500 he's to give me for that ungovernable jade, my niece Clorinda. I hear her now in the next room. Come, supple, away. Step with me into the park to see if we can meet with me hopeful spouse there. I warrant engaged in some innocent freedom, as she calls it.
Poor Sylvia.
Nay, prithee, cousin Clorinda, don't laugh at me. "'Tis no folly in me to fall in love at first sight.
"'Oh, but an utter stranger, Cousin Sylvia, "'and one that, for aught you know, may be no gentleman.
Well, "'That's impossible. "'His conversation could not be counterfeit.
Oh.
"'Beside, he saved my life at the hazard of his own, "'so that part of what I give him is but gratitude.
"'Well, Sylvia, you are the first woman that ever took fire in the middle of the Thames.
Oh. "'Sure.
"'But suppose now he's married.' And has 3 or 4 children.
Pshaw. Prithee, don't tease me with so many ill-natured objections. I tell you, he is not married.
How know you that?
I'm sure he is not. I never saw a face look more in humour in my life. Beside, he told me himself he was a country gentleman, just come to town upon business, and I am resolved to believe him.
But still, my dear Sylvia, you know there's your surly old father's command against you. He's in articles to marry you to another. Though I know love is a notable contriver, I can't see how you'll get over that difficulty.
'Tis a terrible one, I own. But with a little of your assistance, dear Clorinda, I am still in hopes to bring it to an even wager I prove as wise as my father.
Nay, you may be sure of me. You may see by the management of my own amours. I have so natural a compassion for disobedience, I shan't be able to refuse you anything in distress. Now, tell me, how can I serve you?
Why, thus then... Because I would not wholly discover myself to him at once, I have sent him a note to visit me here, as if these lodgings of yours were my own.
Hither? To my lodgings?
'Twas well I sent Colonel Standfast word I should not be at home.
I hope you'll pardon my freedom, Clorinda, since one end of my taking it was to have your opinion of him before I engage any farther.
Oh, it needs no apology. Anything of mine, Sylvia, is at your service. I am only afraid lest my troublesome lover, Mr. Clerimont, should happen to see him, who is of late so impertinently jealous of a rival. From what cause, I know not. I say, should Mr. Claremont see him, your country gentleman would be in danger, I can tell you.
Oh, there's no fear of that, Clorinda, for I have ordered him to be brought in the back way.
Sylvia!
When I have talked with him a little alone, I'll find an occasion to leave him with you, and then we'll compare our opinions of him.
Madam Clorinda, my Lady Sadlife has just returned from the park and would speak with you.
Sure, she here.
Don't be uneasy, Sylvia. She shan't disturb you. I'll take care of her. Thank you, Wishwell. Pray bid my Lady Sadlife enter.
My lady?
Ah, my dears, you have lost the sweetest morning shower that ever peeped out of the firmament. The park never was in such perfection.
'Tis always so when your ladyship's there.
'Tis never so without you, my dear Clorinda.
Was there a good deal of company, madam?
Abundance, my dear Sylvia. And the best I've seen this season. For 'twas between 12 and 1, the very hour, you know, when the mob are violently hungry. Oh, the air was so inspiring, so amorous. And to complete the pleasure, I was attacked in conversation by the most charming, modest, agreeably insinuating young fellow, sure, that ever woman played the fool with.
Oh, who was it?
Nay, heaven knows. His face is as entirely new as his conversation.
What sort of a person?
Tall, straight, and a look as cheerful as a May Day morning.
Pray heaven it is not my country gentleman's.
I wish this don't prove my colonel.
But tell me, Lady Sadlife, how came you to part with him so soon?
Name it not, my dear Sylvia. That eternal damper of all pleasure, my husband, Sir Solomon, came into the mall in the very crisis of our conversation. I saw him at a distance, and complained that the air grew tainted, that I was sick of a sudden, and left my young fellow in such abruptness and confusion as if he had been himself my husband.
A melancholy disappointment indeed.
Yes, Wishwell, what is it now?
A private message for Madam Sylvia.
For me? Cousin Clorinda? You'll be at hand.
In the next room. Come, your ladyship, my cousin Sylvia has a little business. I'll show you some of the sweetest, prettiest figured china. My dear Clorinda, I wait on you.
Now, Wishwell, show him in the back way.
He waits outside this door, madam.
Good day, sir.
Madam.
Wait outside the door, Wishwell, until I call. You find, Mr. Freeman, I have kept my word in seeing you. 'Tis all you yet asked of me. And when I know 'tis in my power to be more obliging, there's nothing you can command in honour I shall refuse you.
This generous offer, madam, is so high an obligation that it were almost mean in me to ask a farther favour.
If 'tis in my power, Mr. Freeman, to grant your favour, ask me freely.
Methinks my fears are vain, but yet, to kill or cure them once for ever, be just and tell me, are you married?
If that can make you easy, no.
Oh, 'tis ease indeed. Nor are you promised, nor your heart engaged.
Well, that's hard to tell. But to be just, Mr. Freeman, I own my father has engaged my person to one I never saw, and my heart, I fear, is inclining to one he never saw.
Oh, yet be merciful and ease my doubt. Tell me the happy man that has deserved so exquisite a blessing.
That, sir, requires some pause. First tell me why you're so inquisitive without letting me know the condition of your own heart.
In every circumstance, my heart's the same with yours. 'Tis promised to one I never saw by a commanding father. Now, may I not know your family?
Yet you must not.
Well, why that nicety? Is not it in my power to inquire whose house this is when I'm gone?
And be never the wiser. These lodgings are a friend's and are only borrowed on this occasion.
Oh, but...
But to save you the trouble of any further needless questions, I will make you one proposal. I have a young lady here within who is the only confidant of my engagements to you. On her opinion I rely, nor can you take it ill if I take no farther steps without it. Wishwell!
Madam?
Desire my cousin Clorinda to walk in.
Clorinda? If it should be my Clorinda now, I'm in a sweet condition.
Madam Clorinda.
Ah, cousin.
That's terrible, the very she.
Defend me. Colonel Standfast. She has certainly discovered my affair with him, and has a mind to insult me by an affected resignation of her pretensions to him. I'll disappoint her. I won't know him. So, he takes the hint I see and seems not to know me, neither. I know not what to think. I am confounded. I hate both him and her.
Cousin, pray come forward. This is the gentleman I'm so much obliged to. Sir, this lady is a relation of mine and the person we were speaking of.
I should be proud to be better known among any of your friends.
Cousin and Mr. Freeman, I think I need not make any apology. You both know the occasion of my leaving you together. In a quarter of an hour, I'll wait on you again.
So I'm in a hopeful way now, Faith. But Buff's the word. I'll stand it and not know her.
Mr. Freeman, won't you please to sit, sir?
Sit with all my heart, if your ladyship will but sit too.
Certainly.
That face is cannon-proof.
Madam, since I am an utter stranger to you, I can only plead the cause of a sincere and humble lover whose tender wishes never can propose to taste of peace in life without your cousin.
Curse of that steady face.
She gave me hopes that when I had satisfied you of my birth and fortune, you would do me the honour to let me know her name and family.
Sir, I must own you are the most perfect master of your art that ever entered the lists of assurance.
Madam?
And I don't doubt but you'll find it a much easier task to impose upon my cousin than me.
Impose, madam? I should be sorry anything I have said could disoblige you into such hard thoughts of me. Sure, madam, you're under some misinformation.
I was, indeed, but now my eyes are open, for till this minute I never knew that the gay Colonel Standfast was the demure Mr. Freeman.
Colonel Standfast? This is extremely dark, madam.
Oh, this jest is tedious, sir. Impudence grows dull when 'tis so very extravagant.
Sure, madam, you mistake me for some other person.
Insolent, audacious villain. I am not to have my senses, then?
No.
And you are resolved to stand it to the last?
The last extremity.
Well, sir, since you won't know yourself, 'tis possible at least you have some small acquaintance with the person I take you for. It can do you no harm, I presume, to own you know Colonel Standfast.
Why, all that's binding, I know no more of him than you know of me.
If you know as much, 'tis enough. And I must tell you, sir, since you will own nothing to me, I'll own something to my cousin for you. I'll take care she shall know you perfectly.
Be not so barbarous, madam.
And since you are so much a stranger to Colonel Standfast, I'll tell you where to find him, and tell him this from me. I hate him, scorn, detest, and loathe him. I never meant him but at best for my diversion. And should he ever renew his dull addresses to me, I'll have him used as his vain insolence deserves. Now, sir, I have no more to say, and I desire you would leave the house immediately.
I would not willingly disoblige you, madam, but 'tis impossible to stir till I have seen your cousin and cleared myself of these strange aspersions.
Oh, don't flatter yourself, sir, with so vain a hope. For I must tell you once for all, you've seen the last of her.
Madam!
And if you won't be gone, you'll oblige me to have you forced away.
Well, madam, since I find nothing can prevail upon your cruelty, I'll take my leave. But as you hope for justice on the man that wrongs you, at least be faithful to your lovely friend. Tell her what tortures I endure in this severe exclusion from her sight. I depart, madam, the way I came, by these back stairs. Day. Death, I can't find my way out. This is the oddest house.
What do I see? The pleasant young fellow that talked with me in the park just now. And in my house, too. I'll venture to pass by him.
Pray, madam, which is the nearest way out?
Sir, out...
My stars, it's you, madam. This is fortunate indeed. I beg you, tell me, do you live here, madam?
Not very far off, sir. But this is no place to talk with you alone. Here on the stairs... Indeed, I must beg your pardon. Let me go.
By all those kindling charms that fire my soul, no consequence on earth shall make me quit my hold till you have given me some kind assurance that I shall see you again, and speedily.
Gad, I'll have one out of this family at least.
Oh, good sir, he has like to be company.
Oh, do not rack me with delays, but quick, before this dear short-lived opportunity is lost, inform me where you live, or kill me. To part with his soft white hand is 10,000 daggers to my heart.
Oh, lad, I am going home this minute, sir. I'll show you down these stairs and out of this house. Then, if you should offer to dog my chair to my home, was ever such usage, lad, sure. Follow me down these stairs, then.
Poor Clorinda.
Nay, you may laugh, madam, but what I tell you is true.
Oh, poor Clorinda.
You do don't believe, then?
I do believe that when some women are inclined to like a man, nothing more publicly discovers it than their railing at him. Oh, your pardon, Cousin Clorinda. But you know you laughed at me just now upon the same occasion.
The occasion's quite different, madam. I hate him. And once more, I tell you, he's a villain you're imposed on. He's a colonel of foot. His regiment's now in Spain, and his name Standfast.
But pray, good Cousin Clorinda, whence had you this intelligence of him?
From the same place that you had your false account, madam, his own mouth.
Aye, pray when?
This day, 7 night.
Where?
In the next room.
How came you see him there?
Because there was company in this.
What was his business with you?
Much about the same as his business with you. Love.
Love? Do you?
Me, madam? Lord, what am I, old or a monster? Is it so prodigious that a man should like me?
No. Oh, but I'm amazed to think that if he liked you, he should leave you so soon. For me.
For you? Leave me for you? No, madam, I did not tell you that neither.
What made you so violently angry with him then? However, to let you see I can still be a friend, prove him to be what you say he is, and my engagements with him shall soon be over.
Oh, look you, Cousin Sylvia, to convince you that my vanity was not mistaken in him, I'll write to him by the name of Colonel Standfast, and do you the same by that of Freeman, and let's each appoint him to meet us here at my Lady Sadlife's at the same time.
At the same time?
If these appear two different men, I think our dispute's easily at an end. But if one, and he, does not own all I have said of him to your face, I'll make you a very humble curtsy and beg your pardon.
And if he does own it, I'll make your ladyship the same reverence and beg yours.
Mr. Clarimont is here to wait upon you, madam.
Oh, for sure. Oh, Clarimont here.
Shall I show him in, madam?
Oh, yes, Wishful. Show him in, I suppose.
I am glad to find you in such good company, Madam Clorinda.
One seldom long in good company, sir.
I am sorry mine has been so troublesome of late, but I value your ease at too high a rate, Clorinda, to disturb it further. So we'll take my leave at once.
Nay, Mr. Clarimont, upon my word you shan't stir. Your pardon, Cousin Clorinda. I'll write my letter in the other room and then be with you, cousin.
Clorinda, it was always my principle to have an humble opinion of my merit. When a woman of sense frowns upon me, I ought to think I deserve it.
But to expect to be always received with a smile, Mr. Clarimont, is having a very extraordinary opinion of one's merit.
Madam, for these 10 days past, I have had no distinction but a severe reservedness from you. You did not use to be so sparing of your good humour to me. And while I see you gay to all the world but me, I can't but be a little concerned at the change.
If he has discovered the Colonel now, I'm undone. I must humour him a little.
Men of your sincere temper, Mr. Clarimont, I own, don't always meet with the usage they deserve. But women are giddy things, and had we no errors to answer for, the use of good nature in a lover would be lost. Vanity is our inherent weakness. You must not chide if we are sometimes fonder of your passions than your prudence.
This friendly condescension makes me more your slave than ever. Oh, Clorinda, yet be kind and tell me, have I been tortured with a groundless jealousy?
Let your own heart be judge. But don't take it ill if I leave you now, Mr. Clarimont. I have some earnest business with my cousin Sylvia. Your servant, sir.
Your servant, madam. This unexpected change of humour more stirs my jealousy than all her late severity. I'll watch her close. For she that from a just reproach is kind gives more suspicion of her guilty mind and throws her smiles like dust to strike her lover blind.
Act 3, Scene 1. An array of pills, elixirs, boluses, tisons, gallipots, syringes, and glasses. This is Lady Dainty's apartment.
Hehehe Sit up. Sit up. Where is my woman? Sit up.
Madam, here I come now.
Thou strangely slow. I told thee the heart's horn. I have the vapors to that degree.
If your ladyship would take my advice, you should e'en fling your physic out of the window. Oh. If you are not in perfect health in 3 days, I'll be bound to be sick for you.
Peace, goody impertinence. I tell thee, no woman of quality is or should be in perfect health. To be always in health is as vulgar as to be always in humour, and would equally betray one's want of wit and breeding. Where are the silver collar boys?
Here, madam. Blackamoor fellows.
Here, madam.
Caesar.
Yes, madam.
Run to my lady Roundsides. Desire to know how she rested, and tell her the violence of my cold has abated.
Yes, madam. I tell her.
Pompey.
Yes, my lady.
Step you to my lady Kilchairman's. Give my service. Say, I have been so embarrassed with a spleen all this morning that I'm under the greatest uncertainty in the world whether I shall be able to stir out or no.
At once, my lady.
And you hear, Pompey, desire to know how my lord does, and the new monkey.
Yes, my lady, the new monkey.
Sit up.
Here, madam.
Where's t'other little blackamoor fellow?
He's not returned yet, madam.
'Tis indeed a strange lump, not fit to carry a disease to anybody. I sent him t'other day to the Duchess of Diet drink with a colic. The brute put it into his own tramontane language and called it the bellyache.
Bellyache?
Sit up, sit up. Never was creature under such confusion as I, sure. At my next visit, half the company saluted me upon it. I was forced to explain the booby's meaning, lest they should have supposed the delicacy of my constitution capable of so vulgar a disease.
Well, your ladyship, for my part...
My part, sit up. Prithee, thou wert made of the rough, masculine kind. 'Tis betraying our sex not to be sickly and tender. All the families I visit have something derived to 'em from the elegant, nice state of indisposition. You see, even in the men, a genteel, as it were, stagger or twine of the bodies, as if they were not yet confirmed enough for the rough, laborious exercise of walking. A lazy saunter in their motion, something so quality. And their voices so soft and low, you'd think they were falling asleep, they are so very delicate.
But methinks, madam, it would be better if the men were not altogether so tender.
Indeed, I have sometimes wished the creatures were not. But that the niceness of their frame so much distinguishes them from the herd of common people. Nay, even most of their diseases, you see, are not profaned by the crowd. The apoplexy, the gout, and vapours are all peculiar to the nobility. And I could almost wish that colds were only ours. There's something in them so genteel. So agreeably disordering.
That I hope I shall never be fit for them. Oh, your ladyship forgot the spleen.
Oh, my dear spleen. I grudge that even to some of us.
I knew an ironmonger's wife in the city that was mightily troubled with it.
What a creature hast thou named? An ironmonger's wife hath a spleen. Thou mightst as well have said her husband was a fine gentleman. Give me something.
Will your ladyship please to take any of the steel drops, or the bolus, or the electuary, or...
This wench will smother me with questions. Bring any of them. These healthy sluts are so boisterous, they split one's brains. I fancy myself in an inn while she talks to me. I must have some decayed person of quality about me, for the commons of England are the strangest creatures.
Madam.
What is it now, sit up?
Mistress Sylvia, madam, is come to wait upon your ladyship.
Desire her to walk in.
The syringe first, madam.
Nay, let the syringe alone. I'll take a little of her company. She's mighty good for the spleen.
Dear Lady Dainty.
Mistress Sylvia, my dear good creature, I'm overjoyed to see you.
Oh, I'm sorry to see your ladyship wrapped up thus. I was in hopes to have had your company to the Indian house.
Oh, the Indian house. Mm-hmm. If anything could tempt me abroad, it would be that place and such agreeable company. But how came you, dear Sylvia, to be reconciled to anything in an Indian house? You used to have the most barbarous inclination for our own odious manufacture.
Nay, madam, I'm only going to recruit my tea table. As to the rest of their trumpery, I'm as much out of humour with it as ever.
How can a woman of taste as you are, my dear Mistress Sylvia, be pleased with anything that's common? There is a peculiar air in everything that's foreign.
I fancy your ladyship hates her own country as some women do their husbands, only for being too near them.
And is not that a very good reason? I hate anything that's to be had like a pound of sugar at every grocer's. I'm ready to swoon at the fulsome shops on Ludgate Hill. And would no more have my equipage in an English dress than of an English birth or education.
No, I think our own habits and servants are as proper and useful as any.
Useful? Oh, deplorable. What a tradesman's reason, my dear, do you give? How insipid would life be if we had nothing about us but what was useful? Can you suppose that so many women of quality would run mad after monkeys, squirrels, parakeets, Dutch dogs, and eunuchs, but they are of no manner of use in the world?
Now, for that reason, I like none of them all.
How? Oh. Why are not you struck with the magnificence of a foreign equipage? As Swiss porters, French cooks and footmen, Italian singers, Turkish coachmen and Indian pages.
Very geographical indeed.
Does not my lord outside's equipage touch you?
Oh, it did surprise me at first, I own, for his frightful blackamoor coachman with his flat nose and great silver collar made me fancy they had dressed up a Dutch mastiff. And I expected every minute to hear him bark at his horses.
Well, thou art a pleasant creature. Thy distaste is so diverting.
And your ladyship's taste is so expensive that really I'm not able to come into it.
Now, it is to me prodigious how some women can muddle away their money on housewifery, children, books and charities, when there are so many well-bred ways and foreign curiosities that more elegantly require it. I have every morning the rarities of all countries brought to me, and am in love with every new thing I see. Are the new people come, sit up?
They have been below, madam, this half hour.
Well, then bring them up, sit up, this very moment.
Yes, my lady.
How can your ladyship take such pleasure in being cheated with the baubles of other countries?
Thou art a very infidel to all finery. Follow me and be converted.
Come into this room. You are the China woman, are you not?
I am. And I hope your ladyship's lady won't be long in coming.
Oh, I don't care if she never comes to you. It seems you trade with the ladies for old clothes and give them china for their gowns and petticoats.
Oh, alas, madam, I'm but a poor woman and I'm forced to do anything to live. Will your ladyship be pleased to accept of a piece of china?
Oh, no, not I. I won't have it, especially without a saucer too. Here's my lady now. Come, give it me. Give it me.
Well, my dear Mistress Sylvia, is not this a pretty sight now? An Indian man with screams and tea, an Armenian man with parakeets, and a woman with china.
It's better than so many doctors and apothecaries, indeed.
Oh, my dear, you're allowed to say anything. But now I must talk with these people. Have you got anything new here?
Oh, yes,
Anastasia. Oh, one at once. You, sir, are the birdman from Armenia, are you not?
Yes, lady. But today I have brought your ladyship the finest monkey.
Oh, what a filthy thing it is.
Now, I think he looks very humorous and agreeable. I vow, in a white periwig, he might do mischief. Could he but talk and take snuff, there's ne'er a fop in town would go beyond him.
Most fops would go farther if they did not speak.
Thou pretty little picture of man. How very Armenian he looks. I could kiss the dear creature.
Oh, don't touch him. He'll bite.
No, madam. He is the tamest you ever saw and the least mischievous.
Then take him away. I won't have him. For mischief is the witch of a monkey. And I would not give a farthing for one that would not break me 3 or 4 pounds worth of china in the morning. Oh, but I'm in love with these parakeets.
Now, to me, they are all monsters.
Profane creature. You fellow, I take to be an Indian, are you not?
Yes, lady. And will your ladyship be pleased to have a pound of fine tea?
What, filthy, odious bohea, I suppose?
Oh, no, madame, right kapaka wawa.
Well, There's something in the very sound of that name that makes it irresistible. What is it about?
About 6 guineas, madam.
Oh, dear, how infinitely cheap. I'll buy it all. Sit up, take the man in and pay him, and let the rest call again tomorrow.
Come out to the room now.
Oh, yes, your ladyship.
Oh, Lord, how feverish I am all on a sudden. The least motion does so disorder me. Mistress Sylvia, do but feel me.
No, really, I think you have no temperature.
Burning indeed, child. Sit up. Where are you? Sit up.
Here, madam. I need Dr. Blister and the apothecary come now.
Oh, doctor, I'm glad you're come.
Yeah, madam.
One is not sure of a moment's life without you.
Pray sit, madam, and let me but feel your pulse. How did your ladyship rest?
Never worse indeed, doctor. I once fell into a little slumber, but then was disturbed by the most odious, frightful dream.
Oh, dream.
I dreamt that there was an impudent fellow that swore he would... whether I would or no. And the horrid creature pursued me, that if the fright had not wakened me, I had certainly perished in my sleep with the apprehension.
There is a certain sign of a disordered brain, madam. But I shall order something that shall compose your ladyship from the apothecary.
Ah, Mr. Rhubarb, I must quarrel with you.
With me, madam?
You don't disguise your medicines enough. They taste all physic.
To alter this more might offend the operation, madam.
I don't care what's offended, so my taste is not.
Mr. Rhubarb, withdraw that medicine rather than not make it pleasant. I shall find a reason for the want of its operation.
But, sir, if we don't look about her, she'll grow well upon our hands.
Oh, never fear that. She's too much a woman of quality to dare to be well without her doctor's opinion.
Sir, we have drained the whole catalogue of diseases already. There's not another left to put in their head.
Oh, then I shall make her go over them again. Now listen, apothecary, to what I say.
Yes, Dr.
Reveal. So here's the old levy, doctor and apothecary, in close consultation. Now will I demolish the quack and his medicines before her face.
Mr. Rhubarb, your servant. Pray, what have you got in your hand there?
Only a julep and a composing draught for my lady, sir.
Have you so, sir? Pray, let me see. I'll prescribe today. Doctor, you may go. The lady shall take no physic at present but me.
Sir,
nay, if you won't believe me...
Mistress Sylvia, let me lean upon you. The rude fellow has broke me file.
Come away, Mr. Rhubarb, come away. He'll certainly put her out of order, and then she'll send for us again.
This way, Doctor, this way.
You see, madam, what pains I take to come into your favour.
I do, Mr. Careless, and you take a very preposterous way, I can tell you, sir.
Do I not stand every morning to find some new impertinence to entertain you? And truly, madam, if you observe, I have taken as much pains of late to disoblige you as to please you.
You succeed better in one than t'other, I can tell you, sir.
I am glad on it, for if you had not me now and then to plague you, what would you do for a pretence to be faint, have the spleen, the vapours, and all those modish disorders that so nicely distinguish a woman of quality?
Impudence!
Modesty is a starving virtue, madam, an old threadbare fashion of the last age, and would sit as oddly on a lover now as a picked beard and moustachios.
Most astonishing!
Madam, I have tried sighing and looking silly a great while, but would not do, so I shall now proceed to dance and sing. Corinna with a graceful air her symptoms doth reveal. Such charms adorn the sickly fair, we scarce can wish her well.
The scene changes to Mr. Tom Claremont's lodging. Mr. Atoll is here with Finder his man.
Finder, are you sure you know the house again?
Oh, as well as I do the upper gallery at the playhouse, sir. 'Tis Sir Solomon Sadlife's house at the 2 Glass Lanthorns within 3 doors of my lord duke's.
Very well, Finder. Then take this letter, inquire for my lady Sadlife's woman, and stay for an answer.
Yes, sir.
Well, I find this is ridiculous to propose pleasure in love without variety of mistresses, as to pretend to be a keen sportsman without a good stable of horses. How this lady's sad life may prove, I can't tell. But if she's not a deedy tit at the bottom, I'm no jockey.
Sir?
What, finder? Not yet gone with my letter?
No, sir. Here are two letters for you.
Who brought them?
A couple of footmen, and they both desire an answer.
Bid 'em stay. And do you make haste where I ordered you?
Yes, sir. To Sir Solomon Sadlies at the sign of the two glass temples.
To Colonel Standfast. That's Clorinda's hand. To Mr. Freeman? That must be my incognita. I have a most mind to open this first. But if t'other malicious creature should have perverted her graying inclinations to me, 'twould put my whole frame in a trembling. Hold, I'll guess my fate by degrees. This letter from Clorinda may give me a glimpse of it. She says to meet her at my lady's sad life's at 7 o'clock tonight, and takes no manner of notice of my late disowning myself to her. Something's at the bottom of all this. To solve the riddle and open t'other letter. My cousin Clorinda has told me some things of you that very much alarm me, but I am willing to suspend my belief in them till I see you, which I desire may be at my lady's sad life's at 7 this evening. The devil, the same place. So now the riddle's out. The rival queens have fairly come to a reference, and one or both of them I must lose. That's positive. 'Tis hard.
I say you hard, Mr. Atoll.
Oh, Clerimont, I say hard fortune. Such a complication of adventures since I saw thee. Such sweet hopes, fears, and unaccountable difficulties, sure never poor dog was surrounded with.
Oh, you are an industrious person. You'll get over them. But pray, Mr. Atoll, let's hear.
To begin, then, in the climax of my misfortunes. The private lodgings that my incognita appointed to receive me in proved to be the very habitation of my other mistress.
Oh, death, how could you stand them both together?
The old way, buff. I stuck like a burr to my name of Freeman, addressed my incognita before the other's face, and harmlessly faced her down. I'd never seen her in my life before.
Oh, the prettiest modesty I ever heard of. Well, but how did they discover you at last?
Why, faith, I find by both their letters here that they've both appointed me to meet them at one and the same place at 7 o'clock this evening. And lastly, to crown my fortune, the fatal place of their appointment happens to be the very house of a third lady, with whom I made an acquaintance since this morning and had just before sent word I would visit near the same hour this evening.
Oh, death, but you can't meet them all.
Prithee, don't suspect my courage or my modesty, for I'm resolved to go on if you'll stand by me.
Faith, my very curiosity would make me do that. But what can I do?
Well, you must appear to vouch for me upon occasion in person.
With all my heart. What else?
I shall want a Queen's messenger in my interest.
Queen's messenger?
Or rather one that can personate one.
Oh, that's easily found. But what to do?
Oh, come along and I'll tell you. First I must answer their letters.
Oh, thou art an original, Faith.
The scene changes back to Sir Solomon's. Enter Sir Solomon, leading Lady Sadlife.
There, madam, let me have no more of these airings in the park. No good, I'm sure, can keep a woman 5 or 6 hours abroad in the morning.
You deny me all the innocent freedoms of life.
You have the modish cant of this end of the town, I see. Innocent freedoms, forsooth.
You wrong my virtue with your unjust suspicions.
It's no matter for that. Better I wrong it than you. I'll secure me doors for this day, at least.
Oh. Wishwell!
Yes, madam?
What shall I do?
What's the matter, madam?
I expect a letter from a gentleman every minute. And if it should fall into Sir Solomon's hands, I'm ruined past redemption. Run to the window quick and watch for the messenger.
I will, your ladyship, at once.
Oh, lad, there's the messenger now. Oh, what shall I do? Be very insolent or very humble and cry? I've known some women upon these occasions outstrut their husband's jealousy and make him ask pardon for finding him out. No, I can't do it. My courage fails me. I must e'en stick to my handkerchief and trust to nature.
So, madam, I've just intercepted this letter to you. I shall make bold to read it. Pardon, most divine creature, the impatience of my art. Very well. These are your innocent freedoms. Cockatrice. The impatience of me art, which nothing could relieve but the sweet hope of seeing you this evening. Tonight at 7, expect your dying Streffen. I can find in my heart, madam, to ram this impudent letter into your windpipe. What's this? Oh, it's addressed to Mistress Wishwell, milady Sadlife's woman. Oh, I'm
glad of it with all me heart. Have I been cursing me poor wife for the mistaken wickedness of that trollop? What's the matter, my dear? Has anything frightened you?
Nothing but your heart usage.
Come, come, dry thy tears. It shall be so no more. Oh, but harkee, I've made a discovery here. Your Wishwell, I'm afraid, is a slut. She has an intrigue.
An intrigue? Heavens, in our family.
Read there.
How impudent creature have an affair with a man.
Oh, but old, my dear, don't let your virtue censure too severely, neither.
I shudder at the thoughts of her.
Patience, I say. How do we know but his courtship may be honourable?
That indeed requires some pause.
Act 4, Scene 1. Still at Sir Solomon's that night.
Pray enter, sir.
Thank you, dear.
This room, I think, is pleasanter, if you please. We'll sit here.
Here?
Wishwell, set the chairs. Shut the door and take the key of the inside.
Yes, madam.
Lud, sir, what a strange opinion you must have of me for receiving your visits upon so slender an acquaintance.
I have a much stranger opinion, madam, of your ordering your servant to lock herself in with us.
Oh, you would not have us wait upon ourselves.
Really, madam, I cannot conceive that two lovers alone have much occasion for attendance.
Lovers? Lud, how you talk. Cannot people converse without that stuff?
Yes, madam, people may, but without a little of that stuff, conversation is generally very apt to be insipid.
Why, we can say anything without her hearing, you see.
Aye, but if we should talk ourselves up to an occasion of being without her, it would look worse to send her out than to have let her wait without when she was out.
You are pretty hard to please, I find, sir. Some men, I believe, would think themselves well used in so free a reception as yours.
Really, madam, I can never think myself free where my hands and my tongue are tied.
Your conversation, I find, is very different from what it was.
With submission, madam, I think it very proper for the place we're in. If you would send for me only to sip tea, to sit still and be civil, with my hat under my arm like a strange relation from Ireland or so, why was I brought hither with so much caution and privacy?
Suppose I had a favourable thought of you.
Uh-huh.
And does that give you a title to treat me as if it were not in my power to refuse you any thing?
Come, madam, I'll be plain with you. Your woman's being with us is ridiculous. If you please but to order mademoiselle to get the tea ready, to boil it a great while and wait till it's done.
I don't know how to make her do any such thing. She knows. I've had tea just now.
I have not. And so, your humble servant, madam.
Hold!
Really, madam, my stomach won't stay, and if your ladyship's tea is not ready, I must beg leave to take a dish at the coffee house.
Open the door there!
Oh, heavens! My master, madam!
Open the door there!
What shall we do?
Nothing now, I'm sure.
Open the door, Wishwell. Say the gentleman came to you.
Oh, lad, madam. We'd better shut the gentleman into the closet and say he came to nobody at all.
Yes, into the closet, then. For mercy's sake, quickly, sir.
So this is like to be a very pretty business.
Open the door!
If I stay long in this closet, how shall I get off in time to my incognita?
Now do you step into your bedchamber, madam, and leave my master to me.
Yes, good Wishwell. And as soon as I'm gone, unlock and open the door.
Yes, madam.
What's the reason, mistress, I'm to be locked out of my wife's apartment?
My lady was washing her neck, sir, and I could not come any sooner.
Bid your lady come hither, and at once.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Oh, lad!
I'm sure I heard a man's voice in here. He must be hereabouts. 'Tis so. He's in this closet. All's out. All's over now. The devil has done his worst, and I'm a cuckold in spite of me wisdom. Spardon now, an Italian would poison his wife for this, a Spaniard would stab her, and a Turk would cut off her head with a scimitar. But a poor dog of an English cuckold now can only squabble and call names.
My dear husband.
Oh, here she comes. I must smother my jealousy that her guilt may be upon its guard.
I did not expect you home so soon, my dear.
Poor rogue, I don't believe you did. Wishwell, go down. I've business with your lady.
Yes, sir.
But I'll watch you from here, for I'm afraid this good humor has mischief at the bottom of it.
Odd so, what have I forgot now? Oh, prithee, my dear wife, step but downstairs and into my study, and in the uppermost parcel of letters you'll find one that I received from Yorkshire today in the Scrutore. Bring it to me and some paper. I'll answer it while I think on it.
Yes, my dear, but had you not better write in your study, my dear?
No, I'm so weary, my dear, I'm not able to walk. There, make haste.
Very well, my lord.
So she's gone. Now, dare not I go too near that closet door, lest the murderous dog should poke a hole in me guts through the keyhole. I've an odd thought in me head. I am one that will discover the old bottom of her affair. I'll first put out the candles. So. And now, in a soft, gentle whore's voice, desire the gentleman to walk about his business. And if I can get him out before my wife returns, I'll fairly post myself in his closet.
Say you so, sir. I'll take care my lady shall be provided for you.
Hist, sir. Come out of this closet, dear sir.
Is all clear? May I venture, madam?
Aye, quick, make haste before Sir Solomon returns.
It is all dark. I cannot see. Is this the door?
Aye, away. So, now the danger of being murdered is over, I find my courage returns. And if I catch my wife but inclining to be no better than she should be, but here she comes, I'll into the closet.
So, my lady has her cue, and I am come in her place.
Sir, you may come out of this closet now. Sir Solomon's gone.
Damned infernal strumpet, I can bear this no longer. Nay, now I have
you. Sir Solomon! Unhand me, sir! Help! Murder!
What?
Oh, lights there! Lights!
Wishwell, I brought lights. Oh, heavens, what do I see? My servant on the floor and Sir Solomon offering rudeness to her.
My dear, my good injured dear, be patient. For here has been such wicked doings.
Oh, torture, do you own it too? But for Wishwell here, my servant, this wretch, this monster.
Oh, hold, my poor mistaken dear. This horrid jade Wishwell, the gods can tell, is innocent for me. But she has had, it seems, a strong dog in the closet here. Which I, suspecting, put myself into his place and had almost trapped her in the very impudence of her iniquity.
Wishwell, horrid creature. And does she think to stay a minute in the family after such impudence?
Oh, my dear. For if this should be the man that is to marry her, you know there may be no harm done yet.
Yes, it was he indeed, madam.
Well, upon your intercession, my dear husband, I'll pardon her this fault. But pray, Mistress Wishwell, let me hear of no more such doings. I am so disordered with this fright. Come, fetch my prayer book, Wishwell.
Yes, my lady.
I'll endeavour to compose myself.
I do so. That's my dear good wife. What two blessed escapes have I had? To find myself no cuckold at last, and, which had been equally terrible, my wife not know I wrongfully suspected her.
Sir, here's my lady dainty come to wait upon my lady.
I'm sorry for her with all my heart. Why did you say she was within?
Sir, she did not ask if she was, but she's never denied to her.
That's so. Why then, if you please to leave the lady dainty to me, I'll begin with her now.
Yes, sir. The lady dainty.
Solomon, your very humble servant.
Yours, madam.
Where's my lady?
Where your ladyship very seldom is, at prayers.
Oh. You keep your old humour still, Sir Solomon, I see, of endeavouring to speak home truths. But I think you commonly guess wrong, for you must know that I have bought me the prettiest cushions with gold tassels, on purpose to kneel upon.
Not unlikely, madam. You fine ladies have a great many fine things that you never use.
Well?
For I don't remember I've seen you or your cushions at church these 3 weeks.
Never miss. If I'm in any sort of condition to endure the air.
And if I'm not there myself, I constantly send my woman to see how the fashions alter.
My dear Lady Dainty.
Dear madam, I am the happiest person alive in finding your ladyship at home.
Your ladyship does me a great deal of honor.
I'm sure I do myself a great deal of pleasure. I have made at least 20 visits today. Oh, I'm quite dead. Not that my coach is very easy, yet so much perpetual motion, you know.
If I had the providing of your equipage, madam, oddzooks, you should rumble to your visits in a wheelbarrow.
Was you with my lady duchesses?
A little while.
Had she a great circle?
Extreme. I was not able to bear the breath of so much company.
Pray, who had you?
Everybody.
You did not dine there.
Oh, I can't touch anybody's dinner but my own. And I've almost killed myself this week for want of my usual glass of Tokai after my Ortolans and my Muscovy duck eggs.
Spud, if I had the feeding of you, I'd bring you in a fortnight to neck beef and a pot of plain bub.
Then I've been so surfeited with the sight of a hideous entertainment today at my Lady Cormorant's, who knows no other happiness or way of making one welcome than eating or drinking. I was ready to swoon at the sight of her table being just come out of the fresh air.
Pray, how was it filled, madam?
At the upper end sat her ladyship, and at each elbow a daughter, with arms like ploughmen, freckled like turkey eggs, and cheeks like Catherine Bear's. They were enough to beat one down with the coarse paws of their skin.
Pray go on.
At the lower end was an unlicked thing she called son, I suppose by her first venter, that sat all the while with his mouth gaping wide, not having from nature wit enough to fetch his breath through his nose. The table was filled with hams, roasted pullets and turkey pies, with a great Cheshire cheese in the middle that rivaled everyone in bulk but her ladyship, and a large tankard of strong beer, nutmeg and sugar, enough to fuddle a grand jury or carry an interest in an election.
A true English homebred family.
In every circumstance. For though she saw I was fainting at her vast limbs of butcher's meat, yet the civil savage forced me to sit down and heaped enough on my plate to victual a fleet for an East India voyage.
God, I had patience. Pray, madam, is it among the rules of your this end of the town breeding to laugh at your friends for making you utterly welcome?
Sir Solomon, one must ease one's spleen a little.
Oh.
Nothing distinguishes the common so much as their gross feeding. And I never knew a true plebeian that had not an odious vast stomach. Sir Solomon.
Oh, I'm sure your ladyship knows the elegance of life.
But the play's begun, I believe. And if your ladyship has an inclination, I'll wait upon you.
I think, madam, we can't do better. And here comes Mr. Careless, most opportunely to squire us.
Ladies, your servant. Seeing your coach at the door, my Lady Dainty, made me not able to resist this opportunity to... You know, madam, there's no time to be lost in love.
Beth.
Sir Solomon, your servant.
Oh, yours, sir.
Lady Sadlife, the assurance of this creature grows almost diverting. All one can do can't make him the least sensible of a discouragement.
Try what compliance will do. Perhaps that may fright him.
If it were not too dear a remedy, one would almost do anything to get rid of his company.
Which you never will, madam, till you marry me, depend upon it.
Marry you, sir?
Do that, and I'll trouble you no more.
This fellow's abominable. You'll certainly have her.
The last time I saw you, you told me you would trouble me no more.
Aye, that's true, madam, but to keep one's word, you know, looks like a tradesman.
Impudent rogue, but he'll have her.
And is as much below a gentleman as paying one's debts.
If he's not hanged first.
Besides, madam, I consider that my absence might endanger your constitution, which is so very tender that nothing but love can save it. And so I would e'en advise you to throw away your juleps, your cordials and slops, and take me all at once.
No, sir. Bitter potions are not to be taken so suddenly.
Oh, but to choose, madam, for if you stand making a faces and kicking against it, you'll but increase your aversion and so delay the cure. Come, come, you must be advised.
What mean you,
to
sir?
To banish all your ails and be myself your universal medicine.
Well said. You'll have her.
Impudent, robust man. I protest. Did I not know his family? I should think his parents had not lived in chairs and coaches, but had used their limbs all their lives.
My limbs, madam, were conveyed to me before the use of chairs and coaches.
Was ever such a rude understanding? Indeed, I have heard of kings that were bred to the plough. Oh, and I fancy that you might descend from such a race.
Madam.
For you caught as if you were behind one. To treat a woman of quality like an exchange wench and express your passion with your arms. Oh. Unpolished man.
I was willing, madam, to take from the vulgar the only desirable thing among them and to show you how they live so healthy, for they have no other remedy.
Oh, a very rough medicine.
Oh. He almost has her.
Leave the room and see my face no more.
Do you truly wish that?
Oh, profligate. To hug, to clasp, to embrace and throw your robust arms about me like a vulgar and indelicate. Oh, I faint with the apprehension of so gross an address.
She faints in my arms. Let me carry thee within.
Oh, abandoned ravisher. Oh.
She's undone. He has her.
In the meanwhile, still in Sir Solomon's house, but in Clorinda's apartment.
Well, Cousin Sylvia, what do you think of your gentleman now?
I fancy, madam, that would be as proper a question to ask you. For really, I don't see any great reason to alter my opinion of him as yet.
Now I shall dash her at once and show it her under his own hand that his name stand fast, and he'll be here in a quarter of an hour.
This letter, cousin, may convince you.
What's here? A letter from Colonel Standfast. Oh, really, cousin, I have nothing to say to him. Mr. Freeman's the person I'm concerned for, and I expect to see him here in a quarter of an hour.
Then you don't believe them both the same person?
Not by their hands or style, I can assure you, as this letter may convince you.
Ah. The hand is different indeed. I scarce know what to think. And yet I'm sure my eyes were not deceived.
Come, cousin, let's be a little cooler. 'Tis not impossible that we may have both laughed at one another to no purpose, for I am confident they are two persons.
I can't tell that. But I'm sure here comes one of them.
Oh. Colonel Standfast.
Hey, Bumba. There they are, Faith. Bid the chariot set up and call again about 1 or 2 in the morning.
You see, Madam Clorinda, what 'tis to give an impudent fellow the least encouragement. I'm resolved now to make a night on with you.
I'm afraid, Colonel, we shall have much ado to be good company, for we are 2 women to 1 man, you see. And if we should both have a fancy to have you particular, I doubt you'd make but bungling work on't.
I warrant you we'll pass our time like gods. 2 ladies and 1 man, prettiest set for ombre in the universe. Come, come. Cards, 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 and tea, that I insist upon.
Well, sir, if my cousin Sylvia will make one, I won't balk your good humour.
Is this lady your relation, madam? I beg the honour to be known to her.
Oh, sir, that I'm sure she can't refuse you. Cousin Sylvia, this is Colonel Standfast.
Your pardon, Madam Sylvia, if I'm a little particular in my desire to be known to any of this lady's relations.
You'll certainly deserve my pardon, sir, by being always particular to that lady.
Upon my soul, Madam Clorinda, you're provokingly handsome today. Gad, why is it not high treason for any beautiful woman to marry?
What? Would you have us lead apes?
Not one of you, by all that's lovely. Do you think we could not find you better employment? Death, what a hand is there. Gad, I shall grow foolish.
Stick to your assurance, and you are in no danger.
Why then, in obedience to your commands, prithee answer me sincerely one question. How long do you really design to make me dangle thus?
Why, really, I can't just set you a time. But when you are weary of your service, come to me with a 6 pence and modesty, and I'll give you a discharge.
Thou insolent, provoking, handsome tyrant.
Oh, come, let me go. This is not a very civil way of entertaining my cousin Sylvia, methinks.
Oh, I beg your pardon indeed, but lovers, you know, Madam Sylvia, may plead a sort of excuse for being singular when their favourite fares in company. But we were talking of cards, ladies.
Cousin Sylvia, what say you?
I had rather you would excuse me. I'm a little unfit to play at this time.
Bless me. Are you not well?
I shall be well presently. Pray, sir, give me leave to ask you a question.
So now it's a coming.
Freely, madam.
Look on me well. Have you never seen my face before?
Upon my word, madam, I can't recollect that I have.
I'm satisfied.
But pray, madam, why may you ask?
I'm too much disordered now to tell you. But if I'm not deceived, I'm miserable.
Her fears have touched me and half persuade me to revenge them.
Come, Cousin Sylvia, be easy. I see you are convinced he is the same.
I know not what to think. My senses are confounded.
No, cousin, believe it. Both our senses cannot be deceived. And since he dares be base to you, He's miserable indeed, if flattered with a distant hope of me.
What means this strangeness, Madame Clorinda?
I'll tell you, sir. And to use few words, know then, this lady and myself have borne your faithless insolence and artifice too long. But that you may not think to impose on me, at least, I desire you would leave the house, and from this moment never see me more.
Madam, what is all this? Riddle me, ree, for the devil take me forever from thee, if I can divine what this riddle can be.
Oh, this insolence grows tedious. What end can you propose by this assurance?
Hey, Dad.
Hold, Cousin Clorinda, one moment's patience. I'll send this minute again to Mr. Freeman, and if he does not appear immediately, the dispute will need no farther argument.
What? Mr. Freeman? Who the devil's he? What have I got to do with him?
I'll soon inform you, sir. But here comes Wishwell. What is it, Wishwell?
Madam, here's a footman, mightily out of breath, says he belongs to Mr. Freeman. He desires very earnestly to speak with you.
Pray, bid him come in. What can this mean?
Oh, madam.
Come hither, friend. Do you belong to Mr. Freeman?
Oh, yes, madam. And my poor master gives his humble service to your ladyship and begs your pardon for not waiting on you according to his promise, which he would certainly have done but for an unfortunate accident.
Oh, what's the matter?
As he was coming out of his lodgings to pay his duty to you, madam,
yes,
a parcel of fellows set upon him and said they had a warrant against him. And so my master, knowing that he did not owe a shilling in the world, drew to defend himself. And in the scuffle, the bloody villains ran one of their swords quite through his arm.
Oh,
but the best of the jest was, madam, that as soon as they got him into a house and sent for a surgeon, he proved to be the wrong person. For their warrant, it seems, was against a poor scoundrel that happens, they say, to be very like him. One Colonel Standfast.
Say you so, Mr. Dog. If your master had been here, I'd have given him as much as I now give you.
Oh, Lord, pray, madam, save me. Oh, the devil. This must be the devil in the likeness of my master.
Is this gentleman so very like him, say you?
Oh, like, madam? Why, as one box of the year is like to another.
And now, ladies, I presume the riddle's solved. Hark you, where is your master, rascal?
Master rascal? Sir, my master's name's Freeman, and I'm a free-born Englishman. And I must tell you, sir, that I don't used to take such arbitrary socks to the face from any man that does not pay me wages. And so my master will tell you, too, when he comes, sir.
Will he be here, then?
This minute, madam. He only stays to have his wound dressed.
I'm resolved to stay that minute out, if he does not come till midnight.
Has your ladyship any commands to my master, madam?
Yes. Pray give him my humble service. And if he thinks 'twill do his wound no harm, I beg by all means he may be brought hither immediately.
Immediately. Ladies, I'll kiss your hands. Sir, nothing at all.
What? Is Colonel Standfast within?
Yes, officer. You'll find him in that room.
I'm sure I'm right. Is not your name Colonel Standfast, sir?
Yes, officer. What then?
Then you're my prisoner, sir.
Prisoner? Who the devil are you, a bailiff? I don't owe a shilling.
I don't care if you don't, sir. I have a warrant against you for high treason, and I must have you away this minute.
Whither must he be carried, officer?
To my house, madam, till he's examined before the council.
Where is your house?
Just by the secretary's office. Everybody knows Mr. Lockham, the Queen's messenger. Quite up.
I won't stir yet, indeed, sir. I have a sword.
Nay, look you, if you're for that play. Come in, musketeers!
Some impertinent, malicious prosecution, I tell you!
This is the strangest accident. I'm extremely sorry for the Colonel's misfortune, Cousin Clorinda, but I'm as heartily glad he is not Mr. Freeman.
When Mr. Freeman comes, I'm afraid you'll find him so. But in the meantime, I will go inquire for my Colonel Standfast.
You seem very much concerned for the Colonel's misfortune, Cousin.
His misfortunes seldom hold him long, as you may see. For here he comes, Colonel Standfast.
I beg your pardon, madam?
Oh!
Madam Sylvia, I'm sorry I could not be more punctual to your obliging commands.
Bless me, Mr. Freeman.
But the accident that prevented my coming sooner will, I hope, now give me a pretense to a better welcome than my last. For now, Madam Clorinda, you won't expect Mr. Freeman to answer for all the miscarriages of Colonel Standfast.
Not in the least, sir. The Colonel's able to answer for himself, I find.
Was not my servant with you, but now, Madam Sylvia?
Yes, sir. He has told us all. And I am sorry you have paid so dear for a proof of your innocence. Had you come 2 minutes sooner, you would have been as much surprised as we. For the Colonel, that strange image of you, was here.
Oh, dear madam, why would you part with him? When I'd sent you word before, I would be with you as soon as my wound was dressed.
It was not in our power to keep him, sir. For it seems that the same officer that mistook you for him pursued him hither and hurried him away to prison.
I give the world, methinks, to see him. What say you, madam? Have you curiosity enough to take coach immediately and carry me to him?
Oh, you'll excuse me if I don't desire to bring you together, especially while the smart of the wound you received upon his account is so fresh upon you. I would not hazard you in a new quarrel.
Why won't you go to the Queen's messengers, Cousin Sylvia, and prove me in the wrong? You'll see no danger of a new quarrel, take my word for it. For I'm strangely afraid that the only way in nature to bring this gentleman and the Colonel face to face is to hold him a looking-glass.
Madam!
Cousin Clorinda, nothing is able to convince me that this gentleman is not this gentleman.
Well, madam, then let me tell this gentleman, this last plot was not so closely laid, but that a woman of a very slender capacity has wit enough to discover it.
Oh!
Well, Madam Sylvia, I hope at least your scruples are over.
Ha! Freeman again! Is it possible?
How now, Clermont? What are you surprised at?
Why, to see thee almost in two places at one time.
Oh?
'Tis but this minute I met the very image of thee with the mob about a coach in the hands of a Queen's messenger, whom I had the curiosity to stop and call to, and had no other proof of his not being thee, but that the spark would not know me.
Strange.
Madam, madam.
Yes, Wishwell, what's thy news?
Oh, Madam Sylvia, your father has been hunting you all the town over.
My father? In town?
He waits below in the coach for you. He must needs have you come away this minute, and talks of having you married this very night to the fine gentleman he spoke to you of.
Oh, what do I hear?
Oh, Sylvia, if ever soft compassion touched your soul, give me a word of comfort in this distress.
Oh, you see, we are observed, Mr. Freeman. But yet depend upon my faith. I'll use my utmost power to avoid my father's hasty will. In 2 hours you shall know my fortune and my family.
Sylvia.
Now don't follow me as you'd preserve my friendship. Come, Wishwell, lead me to my father.
Yes, madam.
This sudden change of your countenance, Mr. Athol, looks as if you had a mind to banter me into a belief of your being really in love with the lady that has just left us.
Faith, Clermont, I have too much concern upon me at this time to be capable of banter.
Well, sir, if it be so, and in return to the little services I have done you in helping you to carry on your affair with both these ladies at one time, give me leave to ask a favour of you. Be still sincere, and we may still be friends.
You surprise me, Clermont, but use me as you find me.
Have you no acquaintance with a certain lady whom you have lately heard me own I was unfortunately in love with?
Not that I know of.
Because I have strong circumstances that convince me 'tis one of those two you have been so busy about.
Not she you saw with me, I hope.
No, I mean the other. But to clear the doubt at once, is the other's name Clorinda?
I own it is, but had I the least been warned of your pretenses...
You own, then? She's received your gallantries.
Faith, not to be vain, she has indeed taken some pains to pique her cousin about me.
Mr. Athol!
But since I now know your heart, Clermont, put my friendship to a trial.
Only this. If I should be reduced to ask it of you, promise to confess your imposture and your passion to her cousin Sylvia before her face.
There's my hand. But, dear Clermont, you'll pardon me if I leave you here, for my poor Sylvia's affairs at this time are in a very critical condition.
No ceremony. I release you.
Adieu. But here comes one you wish to see and I to avoid. I'll take the back way out of the house.
I am more confounded now than ever. I scarce know what to think. The Queen's messenger confesses the Colonel is still his prisoner, but that his orders are to give no soul admittance to him.
Madam Clorinda...
Oh, Clermont.
You seem disordered, madam. Some cruel disappointment has, I fear, befallen you. What? Not a word. Are you conscious of any wrong you have done me, madam, that you stand thus confounded at the sight of me?
You have a very familiar way of expressing yourself, sir.
It was my opinion of your virtue, madam, that kept me humble. But now that's lost.
Oh!
Methinks you should expect to be treated as you are.
What do you mean?
That two lovers and reputation are inconsistent.
What? Has your vanity then flattered you to suppose I have received you for one?
Come, come. You know I loved you to a folly, or you would never have dared to use me thus.
I am glad, Clermont, I am so early warned against your temper. Had I never tried it, my trusting it too far, as once my folly thought to do, might have made me miserable forever.
How subtly that soft thought melts down my anger. I dare not look on her.
Madam, Madam Clorinda?
Yes, what is it, Wishwell?
Madam, Sir Solomon desires to speak with you. He has just received a letter out of Yorkshire from the gentleman's father, he says, that is proposed to marry you.
Oh!
At a price.
What price, think you, Wishwell?
There was talk, madam, of 1,000 guineas to make up the match.
Tell my uncle I'm coming, Wishwell.
Yes, madam, I'll tell him.
Clorinda, you must not, cannot stir on this occasion.
No, Claremont, I shall not. Till I confess the injuries I have done your heart in fooling with a man I never meant on any terms to engage with.
Why then, Clorinda, since Sir Solomon only means to wed you to the highest bidder, e'en let us steal to the next priest and honestly put it out of Sir Solomon's power ever to part us.
Why, truly, Claremont, considering the trusts I have made you, 'twould be ridiculous now, I think, to deny you anything. And if you should grow weary of me after such usage, I can't blame you.
Banish that fear. My flame can never waste. For love sincere refines upon the taste.
Thus to Act Five. And the last scene, like the first, is the park.
Trust me, old friend, Mr. Wilfall. This is a bad business indeed. You've bound yourself in a £1,000 bond, you say, to marry your daughter Sylvia to a fine gentleman, and she, in the meantime, it seems, is fallen in love with a stranger she fell in the river with.
Look you, Sir Solomon, it does not trouble me of this, for I'll make her do as I please. I expect my friend and his son here immediately to demand performance of articles, and if her ladyship's nice stomach does not immediately comply with them, I'll starve her.
Oh, but consider, sir, what a perpetual discord must a forced marriage probably produce.
Discord? Sure. Bah. One man makes as good a husband as another. A month's marriage will set all to rights, I warrant you.
Oh, Lady Sadlife, Lady Sadlife. Poor cousin Sylvia, what shall we do for you? There's no altering him. Did not your lover promise to come to your assistance?
I expect him every minute.
Why, Sylvia!
Oh, this is he.
Is this he? My rogue.
Sylvia, dry those tender eyes.
Ah, Mr. Freeman.
Oh, no, sir. Pray, who gave you permission to be so familiar with my daughter?
Your pardon, sir, but when you know me right, you'll think neither my freedom or my pretensions familiar or dishonourable.
Why, sir, what pretensions have you to her?
Sir, I saved her life from the river at the hazard of my own. That gave me a pretense to know her. Knowing her made me love, and gratitude made her receive it.
Aye, sir, and some very good reasons, best known to myself, make me refuse it. Now what will you do?
I can't tell yet, sir, but if you'll do me the favour to let me know those reasons...
Sir, I don't think myself obliged to do either. But I'll tell you what I'll do for you. Since you say you love my daughter and she loves you, I'll put you in the nearest way to get her.
Don't flatter me, I beg you, sir.
Not I, upon my soul, sir, but look you... 'Tis only this. Get my consent, and you shall have her.
I beg your pardon, sir, for endeavouring to talk reason to you.
Oh, but I...
But to return your raillery, give me leave to tell you, when any man marries her but myself, he must extremely ask my consent.
Before George, thou art a very pretty impudent fellow. But I'm sorry I can't punish her disobedience by throwing her away upon thee.
Supposing I prove myself of equal birth and fortune to deserve her.
Sir, if you were the eldest son to the Cham of Tartary, it would signify no more than the bite of my thumb. The girl's disposed of.
Oh.
I have matched her already upon a £1,000 forfeit, and faith, she shall fairly run for it, though she's yerked and fleed from the crest of the crupper.
What will become of me?
And if you don't think me in earnest now, here comes one that will convince you of my sincerity.
My father? Nay, then my ruin is inevitable.
Oh, sweet son, have I found you at last? What's the reason, pray, that you've had the assurance to be almost a fortnight in town and never come near me, especially when I sent you word that I had business of such consequence with you?
I understood your business was to marry me, father, to a woman I never saw. And to confess the truth, I durst not come near you because I was at the same time in love with one you never saw.
Was you so, sir? Why then, sir, I'll find a speedy cure for your passion.
Father, you may treat me with what severity you please, but my engagements to this lady are too powerful and fixed to let the utmost misery dissolve them.
What does the fool mean?
That I can sooner die than part with her.
Ah, oh, Mr. Freeman.
Hey, Sir Harry.
Heyday, Brother Wilfall.
Why, is this young fellow your son, Sir Harry?
Why, brother, did you not know that before?
Not I, faith.
Oh, earth and all you stars. Is this the lady you designed me, father?
Yes, you fool.
Oh, fortune, is it possible?
dreadful.
And is this the lady you've been making such a bustle about?
Yes, it is, Father. Oh, transporting joy, my Sylvia.
Oh, Mr. Atoll.
Oh, Zooks, she has a great deal of good company, ho. And it's a shame the fiddles should be idle all this while.
Oh, by no means. Come, strike up, gentlemen.
Ah! Now, let's join their hands and dance around them.
By jingo, we'll make a night hunt. Play up, fiddles.
Save you, good people. I am glad, Uncle, to hear you call so cheerfully on the fiddles. It looks as if you had a husband ready for me.
A wine, East Clarinda, that I may have by tomorrow night.
Oh, but Sir Solomon, what do you mean by tomorrow? Why do you fancy I have more patience than the rest of my neighbors?
Why, truly, madam, I don't suppose you have. But I believe tomorrow will be as soon as their business can be done, by which time I expect a jolly fox hunter from Yorkshire for you.
A filthy fox hunter?
God, Zook's a metal fella that will ride you from daybreak to sunset.
Oh.
None of our flimsy London rascals that must have a chair to carry him to their coach and a coach to carry him to a traipse and constable to carry both to the roundhouse.
Aye, but this fox hunter, Sir Solomon, will come home dirty and tired as one of his hounds. He'll be always asleep before he's abed and on horseback before he's awake. He must rise early to follow his sport, and I sit up late at cards for want of better diversion. Put this together, my wise uncle.
Are you so eye-fed, madam, that a country gentleman of £1,500 a year won't go down with you?
Not so, sir. But you really kept me so sharp that I was even forced to provide for myself. And hark in your ear, sir. Here stands the fox hunter for my money.
How? Mr. Clarimont?
Even so, Sir Solomon.
Hark you in t'other ear, sir. You really held your consent at so high a price that I was resolved to save charges and e'en marry her without it.
Hell and the devil. Hey, Day, what have we here? More cheats?
Not unlikely, sir, for I fancy they are married too.
That they are, I can assure you. Lady Dainty, Mr. Careless, I give you joy.
Oh, this rude, boisterous man, Careless, has given me 1,000 disorders. The colic, the spleen, the palpitation of the heart, and convulsions all over. And now he is my husband.
You see, good people, that is a much easier thing to cure a fine lady of her sickly taste than a lover of his impudence.
Oh, husband, you have already cured my folly. And where but my health recoverable, I should think myself completely happy.
For that, madam, we'll venture to save your doctor's fees and trust to nature. Time will soon discover your best physician is a favored lover. Corinna with a graceful air her symptoms doth reveal. Such charms adorn the sickly fair, we scarce can wish her well.
In The Double Gallant by Collie Cibber, Sir Henry was played by Austin Trevor, Atoll by Timothy West, Tom Clerimont, John Westbrook, Careless, Peter Pratt, Sir Solomon Sadliff, Hamlin Benson, Supple, his man, and Mr. Rhubarb, Lewis Stringer, Clarinda, June Tobin, Sylvia, Jane Wenham Wishwell, Lady Sadliff's woman, Hilda Kreisman, Lady Sadliff, Janet Burnell, Lady Dainty, Fenella Fielding, Sit Up, Dorrit Wells, Caesar and an Indian Man and Finder, Jonathan Scott Pompey, an American Birdman, David Valor, the Chinese Woman, Sean Davis,